try to tell you about.
Right, Dwayne R., thank you so much for the KRXA Morning Show theme song. And I heard it, this is the second time this morning because I took over the 7 o'clock hour with Coach. Hope you enjoy that. I'm really looking forward to this hour as well. And starting off with my old professor from constitutional law. And I don't mean old that he's geriatric. I mean old from a long time. You know what, Professor Simon, it's been, I think it's 23 years since I sat in your constitutional law class, Constitutional Law 1.
I would say geriatric is the word for it, actually.
Isn't that? I mean, it's.
Us old codgers, we're still around.
Isn't that amazing? It just seems like yesterday.
Right. It's well, I remember you well. You were just terrific.
I remember. Well, that's very kind of you to say. I think, you know what, with what do they say? The older you get, the better you were. So I think I was terrific also.
Right.
Professor, I heard you on CBS News quite a bit last week. You were opining on the debt ceiling and what the president's constitutional options were. How does that work with CBS? Did they send a news crew to your office at Georgetown Law, or do they, I mean, I'm just curious, they meet you on the street? How did that work?
So sometimes they send a news crew, but that was actually just like this. That was a telephone interview.
All right, well,
CBS has got nothing on you. You're right up there with them.
Well, we have a lot of time. We have more time. They give you just a few sound bites, and that's the way they do it. And we play a lot of CBS News on KRXA. That's our go-to top of the news hour team, CBS. And sometimes they do spin the news in ways I don't like. But I have to say, by and large, I'm satisfied. I won't say I'm overjoyed. By and large, I'm satisfied. They bring us important information. And, for example, they've been reporting not as much as perhaps some would like on the Yellowstone oil spill in the Yellowstone River downstream from the park. And a lot of the other news outlets have completely ignored the story. At least CBS News has let listeners know about this tragedy.
Well, that's good. But what we really need are more stations like yours that are able to go into depth and cover things that mainstream stations tend to ignore.
Oh, no question. We do need that. And D.C. has no progressive alternative. They do have, of course, NPR, but I think NPR consistently bends over backwards to accommodate absurd right-wing talking points without pointing out that they are, in fact, absurd. Professor Seidman, let's talk about this. A lot of dialogue, a lot of reports in the news, and obviously it's of, I guess, importance that the debt ceiling is going to be reached soon. The United States continuing to spend far more than we are taking in tax revenue, and there is a federal law that has provided that we can only go to a certain debt level without that law being amended. Congress, the Republican-led Congress, with some Democrats, are actually saying they're not going to agree to raise the ceiling. The president today announcing that he's willing, in fact, he's asking Democrats to consider significant cuts to future Social Security payments in return for raising that ceiling. I think this is a bad move by him. We can talk about that as well, but I want you to just address the constitutional options available to the president should Congress refuse to raise the debt ceiling.
Well, so there is a constitutional argument, which I would say he could make with a straight face, that is based on Section 4 of the 14th Amendment. And I'll just read it to you here, if you don't mind. It says, "The validity of the public debt of the United States, authorized by law, including debts incurred for payment of pensions and bounties for services and suppression of insurrection or rebellion, shall not be questioned." I think that language is at least susceptible to the interpretation that any measure passed by Congress that would prevent the payment of the national debt would be unconstitutional. It would be a questioning of the national debt. And the background of the provision does provide some support for that reading. It came out of a situation which in some respects is analogous to the one we're in now. So after the Civil War, the radical Republicans were in control of Congress, but they were afraid of losing control of Congress to the Democrats, many of whom had opposed or were lukewarm to the Civil War. The government had incurred large debts in fighting the Civil War, and the Republicans were concerned that a future Congress would simply refuse to pay debts that the United States had incurred, and that's why the language was added. And that is, in some sense, what we're threatened with now. That is to say, people who didn't like a lot of the programs that we incurred debt to pay for are threatening not to pay the debt. So I think there's an argument here. I wouldn't go much beyond that, but there is an argument.
Well, I think you're right. I've read that section as well. I think you perhaps give the argument a little bit less power than I would. I think it's actually a pretty strong argument, given that it's in the Constitution. Certainly the president can, in my view, continue to pay the debts, at least until the Supreme Court tells him he cannot do that. I would note that in a column this week, David Brooks of the New York Times made the point, which I felt was kind of ugly and typical of a Republican, that the debt, he called it a sacred debt, that people had lent money to the government and we have a sacred obligation to pay them back. Apparently the bondholders, those who clip their coupons, the Chinese who have bought U.S. government bonds, and other foreign governments, they are owed a sacred debt. No mention of poor people who rely upon government payouts, no mention of Social Security, seniors who may face very, very dire consequences without that regular check they depend upon. Brooks doesn't mention that. I'm going to mention it to you. What about those obligations? Those don't strike me as debts. It would seem to me that while the president is on pretty firm footing when he wants to pay off bondholders, he may not be on such firm footing when it comes to, say, providing assistance to those who will die without it.
So that is the problem, or a big problem, with the constitutional argument. The 14th Amendment speaks about an obligation to pay the debt. It doesn't speak about an obligation to pay anything else. And I take it that if we stop paying everything else, including as you say, things that money that people need to survive on, but also things like military salaries, keeping the Washington Monument open, just everything else, then there would be enough money to pay the interest on the debt without raising the debt ceiling. Now, I do think there is a response to that argument. And the response is, all of these other obligations are also obligations that Congress incurred. So these are all obligations that are caused by statutes passed by Congress, by money appropriated by Congress. And the president also has an Article II obligation to take care that the laws are faithfully executed. And were he to stop paying all that other money, again, that Congress has told him to expend, arguably that would not be taking care that the laws were faithfully executed. So I think if Obama wanted to make a strong move, this is something he could do. I think he said yesterday, actually, that he was not going to do it, and it would precipitate a constitutional crisis. And this is, we are dealing here with no Obama. I think this runs counter to everything I understand about what his instincts are. But it is something he could do, and I would hope that his advisors are thinking about it seriously, because it's a way of counteracting the kind of game of chicken that the Republicans are playing.
It really is so disheartening to see one political party that apparently has turned its back on the American people, turned its back on our economy, turned its back on everything but what it views as in its short-term political best interest, as well as what the wealthiest of Americans want, which is that their taxes, which are already obscenely low, be made even lower. Professor, we're going to have to go to a break in about a minute. I'd like it if you could stick with me to the bottom of the hour to talk about the intervention in Libya and whether the War Powers Resolution is being violated by the White House if it fails to get some sort of approval from Congress. But I do want to ask you just about the politics of this. What if the president simply said, we are going to be, the Democrats are going to be the fiscally responsible party. If you don't agree to the tax hikes on the millionaires and billionaires, then we are not going to, then there's going to be no budget deal signed.
So I'm a law professor. If I were a political analyst, I that's what I'd be doing, but I'm not. I think my own sense of the matter is, the country would probably be on the president's side, but it would be risky. And it's how that played out would be just very hard to tell. And I, again, we're dealing with a president who's quite cautious and doesn't take big risks, for better or worse. So I think the concern you expressed is one that I share, which is that a deal will be struck which will really favor the Republican side. And I hope that doesn't happen.
All right.
But
we'll be back
after, I think it might.
We'll be back after this.